Columbia Pictures presents Irene Dunne and Cary Grant in a George Stevens production of Penny Serenade with Beulah Bondi and Edgar Buchanan. Screenplay by Maury Riskind, story by Martha Chevens, associate producer Fred Giol, director of photography Joseph Walker, film editor Otto Meyer, music by W. Frank Harling, music director M.W. Stoloff. Produced and directed by George Stevens. A man removes a record album from a shelf. On the cover is a handwritten title, The Story of a Happy Marriage, From Me to You, Christmas 1932. He leafs through the pages, pulls a record from its sleeve, and places it on the phonograph. A woman comes up the stairs behind him.
Don't play that, Applejack. I'm leaving.
Julie.
Will you go down to the station and get me a ticket on the 11 o'clock? And cash that check for me. Smith will do it for you. And I'd like you to drive me to the train.
Julie, you'd better think this over.
I have been thinking it over, Applejack. Been thinking about it for days.
You and Roger have been married a long time.
But we don't need each other anymore. Well, that happens to two people. There's nothing left.
She goes into her bedroom, and reluctantly, Applejack leaves. Later, coming out of the room with a suitcase, an open door catches her attention. A child's doll sits propped up on a bed. Standing in the doorway, she stares into the room. And then slowly pulls the door closed. She is sad but determined when she turns from the bedroom door. Crossing to the living room, she sets down her suitcase and picks up the album. As well as records, the pages contain baby booties pasted to a record sleeve, a brochure on Japan, and other mementos. She looks at the phonograph, walks over, and puts the needle on the record. Smile starts.
I was meant for you.
She moves the needle and then becomes lost in a memory. Julie sits at a piano in a large music store. Through the store's outdoor speaker, a handsome man on the street hears the skipping record and stops to look through the store window, just as Julie rushes to the Victrola. She looks up at the window, into his smiling face. Embarrassed, she turns and walks away. Rebuffed, the man starts to walk away. Then turns around and heads back to the store.
The angels must have sent you and they met.
Entering the store, he heads straight for Julie, but is intercepted by another salesgirl.
What can I do for you?
Oh, the record department.
They're right here.
She gestures at the shelves behind her counter. His eyes settle on a stack on top of a high shelf.
How about that one up there, that book?
Beethoven?
Yeah, the furthest one, is it?
It's number 7.
She produces a copy of the book from underneath her counter.
Hey, keep it down.
He steals glances at Julie.
Needles?
No. Who plays the sheet music here?
I do.
Oh, you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind playing that for me,
please? Certainly, I'll be glad to.
She finally leaves the counter and the room. Trying to look casual, he wanders around the store. Julie, busy tidying her counter, doesn't notice as he walks up behind her.
You're Julie, isn't it?
I beg your pardon.
It's a new tune.
I didn't hear you. Yes, it just came in.
Would be nice to dance to.
It is.
What's on the other side?
Well, it's another new one.
Would you mind playing it for me?
No. This way.
Smiling, she walks briskly to the listening booth. He picks up an armload of records and eagerly follows her into the booth.
The angels must have sent you, and they meant.
Kicking the door closed, he settles in on the couch. Julie looks at the stack of records and shakes her head in wonder. Later, they leave the store together. He carries a very large box under his arm and one record in the other hand.
Good night.
Night.
A flower seller approaches while they wait for the light to change.
Buy a flower, mister.
Julie smiles at the girl's failed attempt to make a sale.
I'm going this way, honest.
I'm going this way, too, honest.
Julie and the man stroll down a dark, quiet street. She pauses in front of an apartment building.
What's the matter?
Nothing. I live here, that's all.
Oh.
Well, night.
Good night. Oh,
He walks up to her on the steps.
Do you mind if I ask you a personal question?
Guess not.
Have you got a Victrola inside?
Why, yes, of course.
Would you let me hear this one? Otherwise, I'll have to take it home and imagine how it sounds.
Don't you have a machine at home?
No.
Well, why on earth did you buy a 27?
It suddenly dawns on her, and she smiles. He stares back at her in wide-eyed innocence. He nods and smiles, pulling the record from its jacket. She leads him up the steps.
It seems your face is near to me.
Julie smiles at the memory of meeting Roger.
No, it's just a memory.
And then gets out another record. Julie remembers a time when she and Roger danced around a brightly lit ballroom. Whistling, they hold each other close and glide under a glittering chandelier. Later, at a crowded beach, Julie and Roger sit thoughtfully at a table, just listening to the music.
What are you thinking about?
That's our song they're playing. At least that's what you said when we were dancing. What are you thinking about?
Just wishing. Wishing I could be with you every day like this. I mean, I wish every day could be a holiday like this. We never have to go back home. Never have to go back to work.
Perfect, wouldn't it?
She takes a fortune cookie and opens it. You will get your wish, a baby.
What's it say?
Oh, nothing. It's silly.
Come on.
Oh, no, really, it's silly.
All those things are a lot of bunk. They never come true.
She looks wounded. A small boy with a big grin places a sand pail on their table. He scoops up some sand and tosses it on Roger.
God beat it.
like kids very much, do you?
Oh, I like them all right, except when they're pests.
Now Roger opens a cookie. The message, a wedding soon.
What does it say? Come on.
Come on,
tell me.
With his hands under the table, he palms that fortune and substitutes one from another cookie. She unfolds the message. You'll always be a bachelor.
Unromantic.
Nighttime at the beach. Julie stumbles over a man on a blanket.
I thought you said we were going to have the place to ourselves.
Oh, well, just the ocean, the beach I couldn't get. Hey, you're doing all right. Two or three more lessons, you'll be able to swim. You can almost float now.
When your arms are holding me up.
Oh, well, when you're with me, you're safe.
She leans against the bathhouse. And he kisses her.
I don't know whether it's safe or not.
I'm darned if I do either.
Must be getting late. Let's get to it.
Oh, no, there's plenty of time.
I'm thinking about that last train home. Come on, Roger. Get dressed.
Reluctantly, he starts to walk away, still looking back at her. When she enters the bathhouse, he leaves. A rumpled Applejack arrives at Julie's party.
He put them someplace where I can grab them fast. I don't belong here.
Well, of course you belong here. Didn't I invite you? Come on in and meet some of my friends.
Oh, gosh, no. Is there a drink in the house?
Right off the boat. That's what the bootlegger said.
Did you say what boat?
Well, what boat would you like? We have all the labels. Come on, help yourself.
You?
Never use it.
Applejack pours himself a large drink while Julie anxiously glances around the room.
You know, this party might turn out all right at that. Where's Roger?
Maybe you'd know.
Pretty crazy about that reporter, aren't you?
I'm sort of fond of him.
That's bad. I hate to see a nice girl like you get mixed up with a newspaper man. Gosh, you never know what they're up to. They can get away with anything and alibi their work. Of course, a lot of fun ducking around interviewing chorus girls and all that sort of thing. Sing to swell. You're married.
Applejack. Don't worry about me. I don't need any advice. I've never even thought about getting married.
No fooling.
No fooling.
Well, I've been worried sick.
About what?
I've been telling him for 6 months. If he didn't keep away from you, he'd find himself married.
Julie sees Roger come in the door. Coyly, she turns and pinches Applejack's cheeks, then sets out to mingle with some attractive male guests. Roger approaches her.
Julie, I've got to talk to you right away.
He takes her hand and leads her through the crowd. They open a door and enter a room already occupied by several couples.
Where can we be alone?
He leads her out on a fire escape.
I've had a real break. Flynn quit his job over in Tokyo. He's our Japanese correspondent. He got fed up with the assignment or the weather or something. Imagine the spot they left the paper in. Only one man in the Orient and he walked out on a job. Oh, Donnie, you're cold. Here, put this around you.
Just excited.
He slips his coat around her shoulders.
There we are.
You're going to take his place.
Well, that's what they want me to do. I've got a ticket here for a train that leaves at 3 a.m. Gets me to San Francisco just in time to catch the next boat for Yokohama. I can't believe it yet, Julie. Imagine them picking me.
Well, you're able, Roger. You have ability. Anybody can see that. You're going, huh?
Well, that's what I want to talk to you about, honey. It's a good salary, 2-year contract, and I'm more or less my own boss. It's the kind of opportunity I've always wanted. So look, dear, I was wondering...
Listen, little boy. Of course I want you to go. That's what's worrying you. Please don't think.
No. I wasn't worrying about that. I knew you'd want me to take the job, sure. But, Julie, Let's get married. Let's get married right away tonight. I'll be there to send for you in 3 months. I'll have the money then.
3 months? Why the rush to get married now?
Well, what, do you think I'm going to let a funny little redhead like you run around loose here? Suppose some other fella came along and... Oh, Julie, I've got to have you.
They stare into each other's eyes, and as snowflakes gently fall, they kiss passionately. Come out on fire escapes.
Happy New Year!
Back inside, they make their way through confetti-covered guests tossing balloons. Julie finds her friend Dot that she works with and talks excitedly while Roger tells Applejack the news. The four rush out of the party. Standing in front of a justice of the peace.
For richer, for poorer.
For richer, for poorer.
In sickness and in health.
Sickness and in health.
To love and to cherish.
To love and to cherish.
Till death. Do us part.
Till death do us part.
Julie and Roger, followed by Applejack and Dot, arrive at a train station.
Oh, we made it.
Well, goodbye, Applejack.
Bye, boy.
Keep an eye on Julie for me.
I sure will, boy.
So long, Dot. Take good care of her.
I will.
Goodbye, honey. Goodbye, darling. Excuse me a minute, will you?
Wait for me.
He pulls Julie onto the train.
Oh, Roger, I can't say goodbye.
Here you are, sir.
A porter opens the compartment door. Roger tips him.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Not goodbye, darling. Just see you later.
And leads Julie inside.
Anything I can do for you, boss?
How soon does the train pull out?
About 3 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Where was it, Adams?
Mrs. Adams. Sounds strange, doesn't it?
Not strange. Sounds great.
Does sound great, doesn't it?
Yes, darling.
Behind the half-closed door, they embrace and kiss.
Oh. Something about a train. I don't know whether it's the way it looks or the way it smells or what it is. It always makes me feel I want to be off somewhere.
Yes, darling. I know. I always feel the same way.
Oh, Roger. I wish this was our honeymoon.
Oh, I do too, darling.
They embrace. He kisses her hand, and his eyes linger on her wedding ring.
Promise me something, will you? Promise me never to take it off.
I'll never take it off, no matter what happens.
Thank you, darling.
They become lost in another passionate kiss.
The train's moving.
I'll get you off.
The compartment door slowly closes. Later, the snow-covered train crawls into a station. A sign states, to New York, 115 miles. The train door opens. A porter steps out and walks up the platform. Furtively, Roger and Julie emerge from the train. Embrace and kiss. Reluctantly, Roger steps back onto the train. Julie runs alongside the moving train for a final kiss. She waves and blows kisses. And her tears. tear-filled eyes follow the train as it pulls away. The memory fades, along with the music. Julie chooses another record and puts it on. Another memory surfaces. Carrying a bouquet, Roger waits for Julie to get off a train.
Roger!
Darling!
They embrace and kiss tenderly. Julie and Roger ride through Tokyo in rickshaws. He watches her adoringly as she takes in the scenery. Pulling up in front of a beautiful home.
And here we are.
Roger points to the house.
Ours?
Yours.
Roger, I didn't expect anything like this.
A man, woman, and three children come out of the house. The man opens the gate.
It's like something in a dream.
She's about seven. Cook Sam or Hannah Sam?
How do you do? Well, hello.
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 Julie greets hello. The children.
Hello there.
Hello. Hello.
The servants' children, they live here.
I thought you didn't like children.
Who, me? They're all right. Come on in. How do you like the place?
Lovely. But it's so luxurious. How can we afford it?
Oh, now don't be so practical when I'm being highly romantic. Nothing's too good for my little wife. Can I see this? Come on. Now, how do you like that,
huh? It's beautiful. Oh, you are sweet. But I'd have been satisfied with anything just to be here.
Oh, I know you would, darling, but only the best for you. Come on, we have it upstairs in this house, too. We have a seihin, too.
What's a seihin, too?
Seihin, too is a Japanese word for bedroom, believe it or not.
That's right, you wrote me, it's so Japanese. Roger, perfect. Simply perfect.
I thought you'd like it. Hello,
Claire. He picks up a kitten.
Well, Roger, are we going to keep it? I mean, stay here right along?
Why, certainly, it's yours. I bought the lease from an American that went back. I got the lease, the furniture, two servants, three kids, a cat and her kids, all for 2,000 yen.
2,000 yen? How much is that?
Oh, about $1,000.
$1,000?
That's right.
How in the world do you do it? I mean, you get the money to send for me and buy all this, too.
Well, I got an advance.
An advance?
Sure, an advance on my salary. Oh, everybody does out here. Only the other day, a fellow down in the office was saying he wished April was here. And I said, why? And he said, well, so I can get an advance on my December salary.
Julie opens her purse. Roger, looking concerned, moves to her side.
Oh, now, darling. You're not going to be one of those wives always worried about money, are you?
Oh, no. No, only...
Besides, you forget we still got the inheritance.
Yes, I know, but... Well, I sort of hate to start off in debt. Especially...
You've got a lot to learn about the Orient.
Roger.
She opens her locket and removes the slip of paper.
Remember this?
Oh, sure, it's one of those fortune things you got at the beach. Well, fancy you keeping that.
They're not always the bunk. You said that.
Did I say that? Well, well.
Sometimes, like wishes, they come true.
Why, sure they do. Certainly.
Roger looks down and reads the fortune. Then stares into her eyes. Julie nods.
Well, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you write me?
You don't like them.
I don't like them? Well, of course I do. Why would I have three of them running around the... And this would be our own. An American kid. Our own. Gee, that's great.
Oh, Roger. Oh, I'm so relieved.
Well, you funny little redhead.
They laugh and hug. Julie has a luxurious kimono adjusted.
Very expensive. Husband must be a rich man.
He's either rich or...
Hi!
Julie spots Roger through the wall-sized bedroom window. She heads down the stairs, wearing the spectacular kimono. Roger goes to another huge window and gestures to Julie to join him in the garden.
What are you doing home this time of the day?
What makes you so beautiful, huh?
How'd you get off so early?
Come on, let me see you.
She models the kimono.
Well, if having babies makes you look like this, we better keep on having them. How do you like it?
Oh, Roger, I adore it. Why all this today? This isn't my birthday.
Oh, it's a souvenir. It's a souvenir of your stay in Japan because, darling, we're leaving.
Leaving Japan?
Mm-hmm. Now brace yourself for good news, Mrs. Adams, because good news is what I bring. We now belong to that class of society known as the filthy rich.
Roger, the inheritance.
Yes.
You got it.
Yes, ma'am.
That's wonderful.
There, now you see, you didn't believe me about it, did you?
No, I didn't.
Is it great?
Clutching gifts, the children approach Roger.
Thank you for the dolly. Thank you for the ball.
Oh, that's all right. I'm teaching him to be a first baseman.
The children leave.
Now, paragraph 2. Mr. and Mrs. Roger Adams, socially prominent young couple, plan to take a trip around the world.
The paper's sending you.
No, I've quit the paper. We're going to have a last fling before we settle down and become good old American parents.
But, Roger, you just didn't give up your job on the paper for no reason at all.
Oh, darling, this trip's an inspiration. Do you remember the honeymoon I promised you? Well, we're going to have it.
But things are different now. We've got to think about the baby.
Well, that's just it. As soon as the baby comes, we won't be able to go anywhere. Besides, I want our baby born in the USA. Then we can get to work and start that little paper.
Well, but a trip like this costs a fortune. Did you get more than the $20,000?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, we didn't get the $20,000. We sold the property for cash and got $13,500.
Well, can you take a trip and buy a paper and all that on $13,500?
Oh, don't forget the still lawyer's fees and deductions, stuff like that.
Well, just how much did you get, Roger?
I'm trying to tell you. After the deductions, we got
$10,000. $10,000?
Mm-hmm. But right. I still got a couple of thousand in bills around here to pay.
Then you really only got $8,000.
Yes. Well, did you ever have that much money in your life?
No.
Well, then what are you squawking about?
I'm not squawking. I just think you're acting like a child. We should be thinking about the future. You rush in and pack up your things and give up a perfectly good job. No grown-up man should act like that.
Oh, all right. I thought the trip would be a lot of fun for you. If I'd known you're going to feel like that, I wouldn't have planned on it. That's all right. Let's forget it. We won't go.
I'll go in and arrange for the packing.
Oh, no. Forget about it.
Julie goes into the house. Pausing in front of the window, she looks out at Roger, sulking by the water fountain. The wind chimes start to sway. As Julie climbs the stairs, the house begins to shake. The earthquake intensifies. Buildings collapse, walls crumble, and water gushes from broken pipes. Roger is knocked about by pieces of the house, but manages to keep on his feet. Julie, clutching the stairway landing for support, gets pinned by flying rubble from the second floor. Debris crashes down around her. On the floor lies the fortune cookie message, "You will get your wish, a baby." The slip of paper is pounded, then buried by falling rubble. A passenger ship heads for port. At San Francisco Memorial Hospital,
Well, that's all.
A doctor sits at her bedside.
Otherwise, you'll enjoy perfect health. Be out playing tennis in a couple of months. Now, I've got some good news for you. I'm letting your husband see you today. How's that?
Pretty.
Make you feel better? I've had my hands full keeping that boy out of here for the last couple of days.
The doctor leaves. And an anxious Roger peers into Julie's room. He smiles at her and tentatively approaches, offering her a small bouquet of flowers.
Hello, darling.
Hello, Roger.
Well.
Sweet.
Sadly, Julie smiles back at him, then cradles the bouquet against her neck. He reaches down and kisses her very gingerly. Then sits by her bed and fidgets nervously.
Gee, I've been miserable not to be able to see you, honey. Well, I've had a chance to do some serious thinking, dear. I've been scouting around the nearby towns, trying to look for that little newspaper, you know. No more silly ideas like traveling around, darling. You were absolutely right about that. I think I found it, honey. It's a little town just north of here, a place called Rosalia. Did you ever hear of it?
She shakes her head as her eyes fill with tears, and she tries to ignore the crying outside her door. A nurse has wheeled three babies into the corridor outside Julie's room.
Well, it's pretty nearly the kind of place we wanted. There's a fellow who owned the newspaper who's been kind of letting it go to seed, but we can make something of it. And best of all, darling, we'd have a home of our own. Something we can always call ours. And if I can make a go of the paper, I'll be able to get you anything you want. Yeah, I'll be able to get you furniture, a car, clothes, everything.
You know, it's strange, Roger. But I can't get myself to care about those things now. They don't seem important anymore. The one thing I've really wanted, I'm never going to have.
The sad memory fades. And Julie, thoughtfully, picks another record. A sign on a building proclaims Courier Press. Inside, the owner shows Roger and Julie around. As the men look through the windows at the printing press in the next room, Julie's soulless eyes are riveted to the door. Pasted on the door's window is a poster of a smiling baby. They follow the owner up the stairs to a small, charming apartment that's in need of a good cleaning. Roger beams with delight. The owner opens a door off the living area. Julie and Roger are startled. The room's wallpaper indicates it was once a nursery. The owner smiles as Roger and Julie sadly turn away. The owner struggles to open a stuck sliding door. It's hopeless. Until Roger lends his assistance. As the door opens, an open window slams shut. Julie and Roger talk it over. Then Roger shakes hands with the owner. A little boy watches Roger print the first copy of the Rosalia Courier.
Well, what do you think of this one, Skeeter?
Quite an improvement. Gee, Mr. Adams, I'd like to get a job with a live wire outfit like this.
You would? All right, Skeeter, you've got one, and a permanent job, too.
Oh, boy.
A car pulls up outside the courier press. Applejack gets out and reads a telegram. And the proud owner of the fastest-growing little newspaper in the fastest-growing little town in the West want you to be press manager. Great opportunity, Roger. He looks at the building curiously, then heads for the door.
Applejack!
Howdy, Big John.
Hello, fella.
How's the old married man?
Well, you had me worried. I thought you were going to let me down.
So this is the fastest-growing little newspaper in the fastest-growing little town in the West.
Certainly!
Now, that's the bulletin for this. What you got here?
It's all new makeup. What do you think of it?
Roger hands him the front page. It's riddled with spelling errors.
What do you print it in, code?
Code? No, the linotype machine is stuck. Why do you think I sent for you?
Applejack!
Miss Julie!
Am I glad to see you? Come on up and help me fix the bathtub. You're just in time.
Wait a minute. Let him fix this first.
All right. The newspaper always comes first around here.
Now, come on.
Applejack examines the linotype machine.
What have you been feeding it? The switch on?
Yeah.
And delivers a well-placed punch.
Now, where's that man?
The redesigned 5-cent weekly rolls off the presses. Roger and Applejack work long hours. The newspaper office becomes a hive of activity. But almost a year later, circulation has barely risen, up from 901 to 908 subscribers. On a dreary, rainy day, Julie sits in the former nursery, staring wistfully out the window. Applejack comes to the door, sees her daydreaming, and starts to leave, but she sees him.
Hello, Applejack.
Oh, I didn't know you were busy.
Oh, I'm not busy. I've just been thinking about fixing up this old store.
Yeah, I just wanted to show you a new ad we got from the telephone company.
Oh. Well, that helps, doesn't it?
Sure does. You know, if we keep on, we'll pay the paper bill next month.
Roger back yet?
No, he's still out running down subscriptions. Said he might not be home until late.
Oh, well, come on then. Sit down, Applejack. We might as well have our dinner.
Applejack looks across the table at Julie, who absent-mindedly picks at her food.
You know, Miss Julie, we ought to have a kid around this house.
Thought you knew about that, Applejack.
Well, sure, I know about that. But I'm talking about adopting one. Sure, you can get some pretty good ones that way. You know, I'm an adopted kid myself. I know that's not much of a recommendation, but I didn't turn out so bad. Besides, I know a lot of regular kids that wound up in jail. Miss Julie, I wish you could have seen some of those little sons of guns I used to room with. They were the cutest little rascals you'd ever want to look at.
I don't think Roger would want a child that way, Applejack. One that wasn't his own.
Why not? He's no sucker. He don't want to gamble. Well, how do you know what it's going to be like if it's got to be your own? This way, you just walk in and help yourself to exactly what you want, and there's no guesswork.
You know, I've thought a lot about that. I want one. Roger was so disappointed when... I just haven't had the courage to...
Miss Julie, you want to know something? He's all for the idea. Only few days ago, we were working together, and I was talking with him. And
you were talking to him about this?
Sure. He's all for it.
Well, why didn't he say something to me?
Look, he was afraid to say anything to you. He was afraid you might have some fool notions.
Silly notions? Why, if he only knew how many... What the very idea? My own husband talking about things like this with the printer.
Press manager, please.
All right, the press manager. Are you going to be the mother?
No, I just thought I...
Fine thing. When I get my hands on that fella.
Hello, what's going on? A fight?
Hello, Roger.
Roger, I want you to look at that new ad. Would you come downstairs?
Oh, look, Roger, wait a minute. Applejack. Why didn't you tell me?
Huh? Tell you what?
What you and Applejack have been talking about.
Miss Julie, I told you in confidence.
What were we talking about? What did you say to her?
You know, about the...
He told me.
Told you what?
Well, you know what we were talking about.
What were we talking about?
Roger, if you wanted to adopt a baby, why didn't you talk to me?
Yes, you should have told her by rights in the first place, Roger, not me. I'm not going to be the mother.
Wait a minute, did you tell Julie I wanted to adopt a baby?
Well, I hinted at it. I tried to break it to her gently, and she...
Oh, you told her?
Yeah.
Oh, Roger, I'm so glad you're that way.
Yeah, she wants it even more than you, Roger.
Well, if that's the way we all feel about it.
I like it, too.
I suppose it's settled.
Oh, Roger, I'm so glad. If it hadn't been for Applejack letting it slip out, I don't suppose I ever would have known. Well,
guess I'd better go fix that press.
Yeah, you fix everything else, don't you?
Didn't do so bad at the bath.
Driving through the city.
Well, Julie, while I think of it. Look, now, when you get to this place, don't get enthusiastic right off the bat. You know, don't just rush in and grab the first kid you see and go nuts about it.
What makes you think I'll grab the first one they show me? I've been doing the shopping in this family for some time now. I just don't bring home anything.
Oh, you came home with this tie, didn't you?
Oh, it's nice. Everybody's wearing bow ties.
Yeah.
In an office.
I have your letter here. 2-year-old child, blue eyes, curly hair, dimpled chin, sweet disposition.
We prefer a boy.
But we'd like to look at the girl, too.
Well, now, Julie, you know we agreed on a boy.
Well, it won't hurt to look, will it?
All right, we'll look. Now, what can you show us?
Well, this is the administration building. We don't have any children here at all.
Oh.
Everybody wants blue eyes, curly hair, dimples, sweet... Everybody wants a 2-year-old child. Will you tell me why?
Well, you see, in our case, that would have been the age of our own child if the...
Oh. I see.
Anyway, when they're 2 years old, they're more or less housebroken then, aren't they?
Well, not always. At the moment, we haven't any children available at all. There's a long waiting list. There are 3 applications for every child. If you get one within a year, you'll be lucky.
What?
A year.
Wait, you mean to say we might have to wait a year?
Well, after all, real parents wait almost a year.
Well, yeah, certainly, but...
No, but you see, we've waited so long already.
I know, my dear, but you're both very young. Then, too, we have to have time to make our investigation.
Investigation?
Yes, you see, we're just as particular about you as prospective parents as you are about the child.
Well,
naturally.
Yeah.
What is your business, Mr. Adams?
I'm a publisher. I run the Rosalia Courier.
Publisher?
Sure.
I beg your pardon. Mrs. Green is on the phone. What shall I tell her?
Oh, tell her that we're sorry. But according to our investigator's report, we find that Mr. Green doesn't have a steady income. Later, perhaps if he finds himself better situated, we'll reconsider their application. You see, it's not our aim to place our children in homes of wealth, but it's absolutely necessary for us to have the assurance that the adoptive parents are financially responsible.
Oh, sure.
I see in your letter that you live in the country. Good. I presume that means, then, that you have a house and yard.
Well,
No, we don't have a yard. We live in an apartment. But there's a nice park nearby.
Oh, yeah, we got a swell roof, too. We've been putting a fence around it. And I could build a slide in the sandbox. Well, as a matter of fact, the roof is better for a kid, because then he can't get out in the street, you see? Look, it doesn't have to be a yard, does it?
No. But you have a separate room for the child, haven't you? That's very important.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yes, yes, we have a lovely room. It's practically fixed up now.
Oh, well, that's fine. Now, about income. Approximately, how much do you make a week?
Well, I couldn't tell you offhand. I imagine about $100 a week. Of course, I'd have to look at the books.
Well, that's excellent. If you'll just take that application home with you, fill it out and mail it in to us so we'll have all the details. And then in due time, one of our investigators will call on you.
Well, fine.
You'll call us before she comes, won't you?
No. We just drop in. That's our policy. You see, we want to find your house as it really is every day, not when it's fixed up for company.
Oh, I see.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Oliver.
Goodbye. Oh, it doesn't matter if he hasn't got curly hair. It doesn't really matter.
They step into the hall.
Hey, they're darn choosy, if you ask me.
Why do you have to be a big shot?
When?
You know we don't make $100 a week.
You want the baby, don't you? They can't prove it. We don't keep books.
Cleaning the apartment, Julie finds some records.
Hey, quit stalling. Get on with the cleaning.
Look, honey, left from the earthquake.
What, Japan? We better buy some more.
Miss Oliver enters the newspaper office. Applejack pounds his fists on the Linotype machine. Spotting her, he sheepishly comes out of the print shop.
Excuse me, lady. You should give a fellow a warning.
Does Mrs. Adams live here?
Yes, upstairs. I'll call her.
No, don't bother. I'm Miss Oliver from the orphanage. I'll find her.
I don't think she's home just now. I think she's in church.
In church? This time of day?
Well, she and Mr. Adams go there quite a lot. They just go there and sit. Fine people, the Adams.
Upstairs, Julie cranks up the Victrola and taps her toes.
Well, I'm sure that she won't mind if I just look around a bit.
No, she won't mind.
Miss Oliver heads upstairs, where Julie is doing the Charleston. Miss Oliver stops and stares through the stair railing. Swinging her cleaning bucket, Julie is dancing up a storm. Miss Oliver walks up to the top of the stairs, steps into the room, and tries to get Julie's attention. Julie tries to hide behind the radio. They can't resist peeking to see who it is. Miss Oliver nods at her. Mortified, Julie comes out to greet her.
How do you do, Miss Oliver?
How do you do, Miss Adams?
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Julie wipes the dirt off her hands.
Won't you sit down?
Then clears off a chair.
Here. No, thank you.
You've come to see the apartment?
That's right.
Well, this is it. It's not very neat at the moment. We're cleaning.
I see.
That's our little breakfast room out there.
Julie points to the dinner table, where she's left the cleaning bucket sitting.
If you'll step right this way.
Miss Oliver follows her.
This is our kitchen. My husband's been meaning to fix this door for some time. I think something
The door opens and the window sash drops.
And that brings us back to the... See, the breakfast room.
The very brief tour leads back to the combination living and dining room.
Could I fix you a cup of tea?
No, thank you. You spoke of a child's room. A lovely room.
Yes. Yes, that's over here.
They cross the room. And Julie opens the door. The spotless nursery has been completely redecorated. Toys sit on a shelf under a large, bright window. Through the curtains, Roger can be seen working on the play area. Miss Oliver smiles.
Well, this is sweet.
You really like it?
Any child would be lucky to have a room like this.
Oh, well, I want you to see our yard. We're fixing that up, too.
Roger comes down the slide.
Well, hello, Miss Oliver.
Adams.
Didn't expect you. I just finished making it. Thought I'd try it out, see if it was strong enough for that 2-year-old.
I think I have a surprise for you. A baby came in yesterday.
No.
Miss Oliver, you mean...
Here, come and sit down.
Thanks. Sit down. That's the reason that we came around to see you sooner than we expected. It's a little girl.
Well, we don't want a girl.
5 weeks and 3 days old.
5 weeks?
Well, we did speak of an older child, you know.
You might have to wait a long time. After all, aren't you making too great a point of the child's age, Mr. Adams? Eventually, this child will be 2 years old.
But we don't know anything about such little babies.
Well, no one does until they have them. And this is such an unusual little baby. Actually, there's another couple who has first choice. Now, that's strictly off the record. But somehow, I feel she's exactly the child for you. That's why I wanted you to see her first, and I couldn't resist giving you the chance.
Did you bring her with you?
Oh, no, she's in the nursery. You and Mr. Adams will have to come over to the city to see her.
What's she like, Miss Oliver?
Well, I can't describe her exactly, but she's... Well, she's like no other child.
Like no other child.
But she isn't a boy.
But look, Roger, there's no harm in looking at her. If you don't like her, I won't say a word.
Well, what's the use? We don't want her. We'll look.
Oh, that's fine. You call me up and I'll make an appointment at the nursery. I must go now.
Oh, I think it's a good idea.
If you change your mind, you will call me up, won't you?
Yes.
Julie follows her out.
Miss Oliver, please don't show her to that other couple until we've seen her, will
you? I won't, my dear.
Later. Roger and Julie stand in the doorway of a large playroom filled with children. Julie looks around for the crying child. Miss Oliver comes in from another room carrying a baby. And Julie slowly walks over to them. The baby yawns. Then opens her eyes wide and stares right up at Julie. Hesitantly, Roger walks over to Julie.
She's like no other child. That's why I wanted you to see her first. Like no other child.
The baby looks up at Roger and yawns.
Well, how about him?
He points to a boy who gestures, go away.
This is a day nursery. All these youngsters have parents. All except this lovely little girl.
Roger gives the baby a closer look. She grabs the finger he holds out and gurgles a smile.
What a grip. For a girl, I mean.
Would you like to hold it?
Would I?
Julie takes the baby and carries her into a nursery where babies are cooing in their cribs. She sits down. And Roger joins her. Neither one can take their eyes off the beautiful baby in Julie's arms.
Are you a kid?
Roger begins to fidget.
Well, you've had your look, dear. How about going back home?
Shocked, Julie whirls around to look at him.
Oh, she's yours, I guess. When do we get her?
Now, if you like. She's yours on a year's probation.
No?
You mean we can just walk out of here with her like this?
It sometimes happens that way. If we make sure that the parents and the baby are just right for each other.
Well,
we have no clothes for her, though. We don't know how to feed her.
Such a little baby.
Well, Miss Morgan will take care of everything. She'll give you the formula and so forth, and then you can go downtown and buy whatever's necessary.
Julie and Roger start toward the door, then stop.
Thank you, Miss Oliver, for being so kind.
Oh, don't thank me. It just happened so. Perhaps before you make up your minds fully to take the child, you'd like to have me go into her history. I can assure you it's an excellent one.
If she'll take a chance on us, we'll take a chance on her.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Oliver.
Arriving home that night, Julie carries the sleeping baby, and Roger carries an armload of packages.
Shut the door.
She wakes up again, you know what that means.
Wait a minute. Wait for that baby while I turn on the light, otherwise you'll drop him. I mean her.
Unable to reach the light, Roger climbs onto a chair. And tries again. He almost gets it. Stretches, but then steps down to regain his balance. He reaches again, and this time gets it. The baby sleeps through it all. The baby stirs. Julie admonishes Roger with a shake of her head. Roger picks up the packages from the floor as Julie starts up the stairs. The baby nearly wakes.
Take off your shoes.
Julie stands still on a step while Roger carefully removes her high heels. Then takes off his shoes. The baby stirs, but doesn't wake up. Roger and Julie start up slowly, then break into a gallop. Reaching the landing, they sigh with relief. The baby's still asleep. In the nursery, Julie and Roger create a makeshift railing by placing chairs around the bed.
Get the big one in by our room.
Roger sets aside a small chair and runs through the connecting bathroom to their bedroom for a bigger one. On the way back, he gets the chair stuck in the doorway. Julie helps him get the last chair in place.
That's all right. Come on, let's go to bed.
No.
Not wanting to leave the baby, Julie fusses nervously. And checks the baby's schedule, taped to the wall.
I don't think I'll go to bed. She eats again in a half hour. Directions say so.
I'll set the alarm. Come on.
Julie looks at the baby, then reluctantly goes to their room.
Turn the bed close now.
Roger fumbles with the clock, trying to set it. The baby stirs and fusses. Julie tries to take the clock from Roger, who pushes her hand away. She tries again, aggravating him even more. When the wind-up key comes off in his hand, he shoves the clock at Julie. He closes the bedroom door. She stuffs the clock under a pillow to muffle the alarm. They turn and look expectantly toward the baby's room. Then make a mad dash for the nursery. They hover over the sleeping baby.
Oh, what's the matter with it?
I don't know. Do you think she's all right?
Huh?
Roger switches on the light.
Is it breathing?
They lean in close to the baby and listen.
She's certainly a good little baby, isn't she?
We were lucky to get her. Let's go to bed.
Lingering at the baby's side, Julie kisses a finger and tenderly places it on the baby's lips. Smiling, she backs out of the room and turns out the light. Roger gets into bed. Julie switches off the light, listens for the baby, then tumbles into bed. Roger and Julie leap out of bed and race to the nursery. Julie picks up the baby as Roger turns on the light. Holding the baby, she bounces it awkwardly.
But do something, quickly! But do something. Can't you see the baby suffering?
I just did. I don't know what to do.
Oh. Oh, now don't just stand there. Do something.
Julie hands the baby to Roger.
You do something.
Roger begins rocking the baby, gently swaying her to and fro.
Oh, no, no, I'm going to get Miss Oliver.
Julie rushes out, while Roger continues to rock the baby. In the hallway, Julie comes to a screeching halt at the sudden silence. Returning to the bedroom, she stares in disbelief. The baby is smiling as Roger continues to rock.
Just wanted her daddy. Move the chair, please. Shh.
Roger puts the baby back to bed. Just after 2 a.m. in the bedroom, the alarm clock sits on the nightstand, wrapped in a scarf to muffle it. Roger is fast asleep. Julie is wide awake. Listening for the baby, Julie carefully climbs out of bed and goes to the nursery. Picking the baby up, she carries it back to the bedroom. Julie tucks the baby into bed, then climbs in next to her. She and the baby cuddle and smile at each other until Julie closes her eyes and falls asleep. Roger wakes up and checks the clock. It's 2:08. He gets out of bed and heads for the nursery. Creeping into the room, he finds a bottle of formula. Checks the baby's schedule. And picks up a thermometer from the baby's table. Wearing a broad, funny grin, he tiptoes to the bed. It's empty. He pulls off the blankets, knocks over chairs, and tosses bedding and pillows, searching for the baby. He switches on the light and looks again.
Julie, the baby! It's gone! The baby's kidnapped!
Julie jumps out of bed. Roger sees the baby on the bed. And the terror drains from his face. He looks at Julie, annoyed. She feigns innocence.
She was lonesome, so I brought her in here with us.
Don't ever do that to me again.
Next day.
Morning, boys.
Applejack and his crew start the presses rolling. Roger comes flying in his pajamas and robe.
Shut it off! Hello?
He runs over and throws the off switch.
Now, what are you trying to do?
What am I trying to do? Well, I'm trying to get your crummy paper out. That's what I'm trying to do.
What's the idea of waking the baby up?
What baby?
My baby.
Your baby?
Yeah. Came last night.
No fooling a baby?
Yeah. Why, you baby? Quiet! Come on, I'll show it to you.
Gesturing to them to stay quiet, Roger leads Applejack and the men up the stairs. The men sit around the table cracking nuts and watch as Julie carries the baby in a towel-lined basin into the kitchen. She sets it down by a portable baby bathtub. Very carefully, she starts to lift the baby.
Can I help?
No.
Ben puts the baby back down and struggles to pull up the tub's cover that doubles as a changing table. She finally manages to get the changing table set up. And lifts the baby onto it.
Sure you don't want me to help?
No, thanks.
Now Julie has difficulty removing the baby's sleeper, as the men continue to watch her every move. At last, the sleeper comes off, and she starts to work on the vest and diaper. Finally, the baby is ready for her bath. Julie sets the baby in the basin and gets the tub ready. She picks up the baby and immediately sets her back down again. She checks the bath water on the stove.
What's the matter?
Nothing's the matter.
She lifts the baby from the basin again, carries her over to the tub, then quickly returns her to the basin.
What's the trouble?
I can't do anything as long as you're sitting around here watching me. Get out. Go on, get out, all of you. What do you think this is?
Come on now, get off that paper and be quiet about it.
Roger, I'm
out of
bed. I'm afraid I'll
drown. Oh, no, darling. No, take it easy.
I could drown in that much water.
Oh,
here.
No.
Applejack drains out the excess bath water, then checks the water temperature with his elbow and attaches the tub's mat over the water.
Hello, your peanut. Your Uncle Applejack's going to give you a nice bath.
He puts the baby on the mat.
Give me that wash rag.
He dips the washcloth in the water, then gently rubs it over the baby.
I'll never be able to do that. We'll have to give it back.
Sure you will. I'll tell you, baby, darling.
All you got to do is decide who's boss, you or it.
Father, where did you ever learn to do that, Applejack?
My sister had four kids. She took two and I take two.
So pretty.
He lifts the baby out of the water and with Julie's help, puts the lid back over the tub.
Where's that towel? Malcolm.
Here.
Applejack sprinkles talcum on the baby, tosses powder over his shoulder for luck, and expertly rubs the powder into the baby's skin.
Coochie, coochie, girl. Coochie, coochie, girl. Where is it?
What?
It.
Oh.
Julie gets a fresh diaper.
Yes, sir. Who's a mighty fine girl?
As Applejack lifts the baby, Julie tries to fold the diaper properly, but can't figure it out.
Just a minute.
Applejack reassures the baby, while Julie continues to mangle the diaper.
You think you can hold this a minute without dropping it?
Oh, sure. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Yes, 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 yes.
Here, give it here.
I forget what it is.
Now watch this closely.
Applejack deftly folds the diaper, then pins it together.
I'm a one-pin man myself. There you are. You jump right in there, Peanut.
He slides the pin diaper right over the baby's legs.
You go to your mama. Oh. You better write all that down because I might get a better offer.
The memory dissolves as the record ends. Julie gets out another record. Prompting another memory.
Just Molly and me.
The family is enjoying their rooftop garden. Roger tosses the baby, now a toddler, in the air.
She's got you a smile, Roger.
Oh, sure, she's good looking.
Still sorry she wasn't a boy?
Huh? A boy? What do you mean a boy? Shh, let her hear that. You wanted a boy, I didn't. Boy. Trina's daddy's a little girl, aren't you, Trina?
Miss Oliver enters the deserted newspaper office. The presses stand idle. She pauses, looks around, then crosses the corridor.
Oh, Roger, be careful now.
He's lifting Trina high into the air. As Miss Oliver appears at the top of the apartment stairs.
Hello?
Julie puts down her sewing and goes to greet her.
Hello, Miss Oliver.
How do you do, Miss Adams?
Come in. Thank you so much for letting us know you were coming this time.
Hello, Miss Oliver.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Adams?
Trina, this is your fairy godmother, Miss Oliver.
Hello, sweetheart.
Trina offers her hand.
Yes, she's not very timid, is she? I can plainly see that she adores her father.
She means everything to us.
Oh, she might get a cold.
Yes, she do everything.
When are we going to get to own her outright?
You go before the judge, the 27th.
27th, huh?
You'll want to see these charts, I suppose.
Yes.
They sit down in the garden. Miss Oliver puts on her glasses and takes out the questionnaire.
One you can send back to us. And the other you'll file with the court, at the court with the final papers.
Uh-huh.
These are the same questions that you answered last year. We just want to bring them up to date. Now, let's see. Religion? Same.
Roger makes funny faces at Trina in the playpen.
Age?
1 year older.
I have that. Profession? Still publisher, isn't it?
Yes.
Income? Income.
Well, you see, Miss Oliver...
None.
Miss Oliver is stunned. She looks at Trina, who returns her look of concern. Julie fidgets nervously. Miss Oliver slowly puts the cap back onto her pen.
That's the way it is in the newspaper game, Miss Oliver. Especially when you're starting one of your own. You have to close down once before you really get going. Ah, it's only temporary. I'm having a jam in my wholesale paper mill. First thing you know, I'll have it humming by the 27th. Only close for a while.
I'm sure you'll find a way, Mr. Adams.
She puts the questionnaire back in her briefcase.
But you and I have to prove to the judge that your income is enough to take care of Trina.
You know we'd give Trina everything she needed, Miss Oliver, no matter who else had to suffer around here.
I realize that.
She looks at Trina, standing in her playpen.
Well, I must go now. That's all we can do today.
Could I drive you to the train?
No, thank you. I really like to walk. This country air is so fresh. Goodbye.
Julie throws herself into Roger's arms.
Bad Lex. She doesn't want us to have Trina.
Yes, she does, darling. Oh, yes, she does.
A stuffed toy rabbit sits on the staircase. Julie puts Trina's clothes in a suitcase as Applejack comes slowly up the stairs. Trina, wearing a white bonnet, sits solemnly in her high chair looking around. Applejack picks up a doll and carriage, while Trina's eyes follow him as he carries it down the stairs. Julie closes the suitcase. Roger comes in, walks to the high chair, and picks up the baby. Julie hurries over, and they huddle together as a family. Roger picks up the suitcase. Slowly walks down the stairs, carrying Trina. He pauses and turns around. Trina points to the top of the stairs. He takes Trina back up the stairs, where Julie, sitting on the floor, hands her the toy rabbit. Tears streaming down her face, Julie watches them go back down the stairs, where Applejack opens the door. Getting up, she races to the window and watches broken-hearted as Roger's car pulls away from the curb. In a courtroom...
To better prepare your facts.
Option proceedings. The Adams case.
What?
The Adams case. Oh, yes, yes, sir.
Either one or both of you gentlemen conduct yourselves like you've been doing today, I'll hold you in contempt. The both of you.
The judge enters his chambers, where Roger, Trina, and Miss Oliver are waiting.
Oh, this is the child in question. Let me see.
He takes a document from Miss Oliver and reads it as he walks to his desk.
Yes, let's see.
He glances at some other papers on his desk and sits down.
Looking over these adoption papers here, I see that you have no income at present. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
What is this, Miss Oliver? You know, this case should never come before me.
Well, Your Honor, I feel that this is a special case. I've kept hoping until the last minute that Mr. Adams might be able to resume the office of his paper or get a job. But unfortunately, he hasn't been able to do either, so I thought...
Well, under these conditions, I cannot grant the adoption. This child will have to revert to the orphanage. Will you draw up a chair, please, while I prepare these release papers for you to sign?
Trina sits alone in a huge armchair and watches Roger as he approaches the judge.
Oh, it's just a matter of routine.
Roger takes the chair opposite the judge. And then stands up.
If you please, Your Honor.
It can't just be a matter of routine for people to have their baby taken away from them. This child is ours, Judge.
Yeah, those are the requirements of the law.
Yes, but you see, we've had her since she was 6 weeks old. It just doesn't seem reasonable that we should have to give her back now to strangers.
Mr. Adams, you're not here to plead your case. You've had the regular opportunity to prove your fitness to provide.
We are fit, Judge, if you just look at the record.
Without any income, I have no alternative. Didn't you make that clear, Miss Oliver?
Yes, Your Honor, I did, but I thought...
I'm sorry, but that is the law.
He turns back to the papers on his desk. Roger grows angry. Trina, wide-eyed, stares at her father.
Look, Your Honor, she's not like an automobile or an icebox or a piece of furniture or something you buy on time, and then when you can't keep up the payments, they take it away from you? Now sit still and be a good girl. Anyone can give up those kind of things. But I ask you, Judge, how can you give up your own child? And she is our child just as much as if she'd been born to us. No, Daddy's not going to go away, dear.
Trina smiles. Her face lights up.
Look, Judge, we've had her over a year now. Why, we've walked the floor with her when she had the colic. We've lost nights of sleep worrying every time she cut a tooth. We've gone through everything. Everything that real parents have is one of their own. Ask Miss Oliver here about the inspections we've had to have. Her weight charts, her vaccination certificates, her toys, her dresses, her toothbrush. They come around regularly and check up on all those things to see if we're taking care of her properly. How many real parents could keep one of their own and go through that? And you sit there and say it's a matter of routine for you to take her away from us.
Please, Mr. Adams.
I'm sorry, Judge. But... well, you see, we weren't as fortunate as most people. We'd have had one of our own, only I. Well, you don't know how badly my wife wanted a child. It wasn't so important to me. I don't know, I suppose most men are like this, but children never meant a great deal to me. Oh, I like them all right, I suppose, but... well, what I'm trying to say is, Your Honor, the first time I saw her, she looked so little and helpless. I didn't know babies were so little. And then when she took hold of my finger and held onto it, she just sort of walked into my heart, Judge, and she was there to stay. I didn't know I could feel like that. I'd always been, well, kind of careless and irresponsible. I wanted to be a big shot. I couldn't work for anybody. I had to be my own boss, that sort of thing. Now here I am standing in front of a judge pleading for just a little longer so that I can prove to you I can support a little child that doesn't weigh quite 20 pounds. It's not only for my wife and me I'm asking you to let us keep her, Judge. It's for her sake, too. She doesn't know any parents but us. She wouldn't know what had happened to her. You see, there's so many little things about her, and nobody would understand her the way Julie and I do. We love her, Judge. Please don't take her away from us. Look, I'm not a big shot now. I'll do anything. I'll work for anybody. I'll beg, I'll borrow. Please, Judge, I'll sell anything I've got until I get going again. Well, she'll never go hungry. She'll never be without clothes, not as long as I've got two good hands to help me.
The judge's face has remained impassive throughout Roger's speech. Roger sits back down. The judge looks at the papers in front of him and begins writing. Trina's eyes are filled with tears. Julie sits alone at the dinner table, occasionally glancing around the empty apartment. Downstairs, Roger comes in the front door. and slowly makes his way up the stairs. Julie sits staring into space. Her eyes travel to where Roger is standing with Trina in his arms. Beaming, Roger carries Trina over to her.
She's yours, dear. Now and forever.
Julie takes the baby.
Oh, Trina.
Nothing can ever take her from us now.
The memory fades, and the song ends. Julie chooses yet another record. The apartment has been beautifully redecorated. Trina has grown into a child of about 6 years old, and she watches as Roger sets the table.
You better hurry up, Daddy. Mommy will be home any minute now.
Yeah. Well, look, dear, you go and watch for her. Let me know when she comes, huh?
Trina stations herself at the top of the stairs while Roger gives the table a final check.
How's it getting along, Applejack?
Ain't she a beauty?
And then, in the kitchen, helps Applejack check on the turkey.
Here she comes.
Well, now? Well, let's get the presents, quick.
Roger and Trina rush to the living room.
Oh, here she comes. We'll get them later.
They race back to the kitchen. Julie looks down the adjoining hallway. They hide from her. Julie walks to the living room, looks up, and sees them sneaking out of the kitchen to hide in the hall. She joins the game of cat and mouse. She looks around the corner. She sees them, but they don't see her.
Where is everybody?
Roger and Trina grab the gifts.
Trina! Trina? Where can everybody be this time of the day?
They pop out from behind a chair.
Happy birthday, darling.
Oh, oh, thank you.
Come on, sit down.
You.
Trina's going to make a present.
Well, I'd almost forgotten today was my birthday.
This is from Daddy.
Daddy?
Huh?
Roger holds Trina, and they all watch Julie unwrap the gift. A wristwatch.
Roger, I always wanted one like that.
She kisses Roger.
Darling.
I'm glad you like it, darling.
And this is from Uncle Applejack.
Uncle Applejack? Oh, I think I can guess what this is.
I got you.
Oh, it's beautiful, Applejack.
I always figure a person can't have too many handkerchiefs.
Thank you.
Applejack heads back to the kitchen.
And this is from me.
From you? Well, now, imagine what this is.
I got you a record because you love records. And because you and Daddy love each other so much.
Oh, Trina, that's sweet, darling. Thank you. Come on, let's play it. See, I'll go.
Dinner's ready. Come and get it or I'll throw it in the creek.
Oh, but isn't it wonderful? Dinner in my own home, and I didn't have to cook it.
Well.
Woo.
Trina gapes at the succulent turkey as Roger starts carving. Later, the bird has been picked clean to its bones. Roger pokes his fork around the platter, scrounging for dressing.
Well, we sure changed the complexion of that bird.
We certainly did.
What'd you do in school today, Don?
Oh, I almost forgot I was Jews. I'm going to be in the Christmas play.
In the Christmas play?
What are you going to do?
I'm going to sing in the carols.
Roger signals Applejack to the kitchen.
It'll be fun making you a caroler's costume.
I don't need any costume. Nobody sees me.
Nobody sees you?
All I have to wear is a cream dress and some sneakers. I'm the Echo. I'm way off behind the scenes. You only hear my voice. Miss Hopkins says it gives a faraway sound, like angels in heaven.
Oh.
Well, why do you have to wear the sneakers?
The sneakers are so I'll be quiet. I have to walk up in the sky behind a cloud and take a big star with me. Then when I get over the manger, I stop. And then the angels sing. And when my turn comes, I sing the echo. Then I sneak off quietly. And next year, when I'm big, I get to be an angel and wear an angel suit. I'll get seen then.
Of course you'll get seen then, darling.
Is it a long time until next year, Daddy?
Oh, no, darling. It'll be here in no time at all.
Roger signals to Trina, who smiles and nods, then leaves the table. She goes into the kitchen, then pops back out.
Oh, I forgot.
She flips the light switch.
Oh, my, what happened to the lights?
Shh.
Did you see the lights go out?
Happy birthday to you.
Trina comes out of the kitchen, carrying a cake with sparkling candles. The icing spells out, "Happy birthday from Roger, Trina, and me too, Applejack." Nighttime. A car pulls up beside a school.
Hurry up, Mommy.
I'll park the car.
All right, see you out front.
Children dressed as angels file on stage around the manger. In the audience, Roger and Julie watch expectantly. Applejack comes in a side door and stands at the back of the auditorium. Trina, holding a cardboard cloud, walks up an angled plank resting against a high platform just behind the scenery. The cloud appears and begins moving toward the manger. Julie clutches Roger's arm. Trina tiptoes slowly along the platform until she's above the manger. She secures the cloud, then pulls the star on a wire. It drifts behind the cloud, then reappears on the other side. Applejack watches and beams with pride. Behind the cloud, Trina sings. Holding hands, Roger and Julie smile proudly. Down the plank. The star shoots across the stage. Julie starts out of her seat. Backstage, Trina, having caught the cloud, grins broadly until she sees Miss Hopkins frowning over her. In the car, Trina sits on her mother's lap, crying.
I spoiled everything. Now Miss Hopkins won't let me be an angel next year.
Yes, she will, darling.
Certainly.
Yes, I was talking to her. She said you did fine.
Sure. Why, you were better than all the rest of them put together.
See?
Honest?
Honest.
Trina smiles.
See, I don't know what people do without Christmas.
Oh, I don't know what we'd do without you, honey.
Julie hugs Trina closer to her. The Christmas memory disappears. Julie hesitates before picking up another record and putting it on. Julie writes a letter. Dear Miss Oliver, another Christmas is with us, so soon. It seems like yesterday that our little Trina was in her first Christmas play. In her office, Miss Oliver sifts through the mail on her desk. One envelope has the return address, Rosalia Courier. It's from Julie. Opening the letter, she begins to read. One passage startles her. Less than 3 weeks ago, Trina was here, looking to Roger and me for love and shelter and food and clothing with all the helplessness of the very young. Now she does not need us. Miss Oliver turns to the next page. A sudden, brief, hopeless illness, and she was gone. Nothing can ever take Trina away from us. We said that day so long ago when she was finally ours, but we had forgotten about... Miss Oliver is stunned. Slowly she removes her glasses, takes a handkerchief, and dries her eyes. That night, a hard rain falls in Rosalia. Inside their apartment, Julie sits staring into the fireplace, while Roger stares at the floor. In her office, Miss Oliver struggles for composure. The letter continues. Since the night of Trina's death, we have been strangers to one another. I don't know what to do. It seems as if there is nothing between us anymore. I have tried to talk to him, but he does not wish to listen. He is punishing himself, not realizing he is also punishing me. Completely distraught, Miss Oliver covers her face with her hands. Back at the apartment, Roger is still staring into space. Across the room, Julie, too, remains lost in her own thoughts. Roger snaps out of his trance, gets up, and begins to pace.
Would you please stop that door from banging?
Roger doesn't move. It's as if he didn't hear her. Julie gets up, walks into Trina's bedroom, and locks the banging door to the play area. Roger disappears into their bedroom. Coming out of Trina's room, Julie finds Roger with his coat and hat.
I wish you wouldn't go out.
I'd better get out of here and get some fresh air.
Isn't that someone downstairs?
door.
Roger just looks at her indifferently. When Julie sees that he's not going to answer the door, she goes to get it. A woman and child stand in the pouring rain. Julie opens the front door.
May I use your phone, please? Our car stalled, and I'd like to call a taxi.
Yes, it's right here on the desk if you'll just walk around that way.
Thank you.
The woman and a little boy come in.
I saw your light burning, and we're in such a hurry.
The boy hops up on a large leather chair. Julie catches herself staring, then quickly turns to the woman using the phone.
Cabs are always busy on a night like this.
I do hope we can get one. Tommy's in the Christmas play.
Sadly, Julie nods. Roger comes downstairs.
I hope we don't get late, Mommy.
Our car's right out in front. I'll drive you over if you like.
Oh, that's very kind of you, but wouldn't be too much trouble.
Not too much trouble.
Julie gets a coat.
Come with me.
You can't start the car. The battery's dead. I'll have to crank it.
Avoiding Julie, he walks to the door. The others follow him outside. They pull up by the school. Children dressed as angels are filing into the building.
You hope we're not late, Mama.
The car door opens. The little boy jumps out and runs to join his castmates. He's wearing new white sneakers.
I can't thank you enough. If you only knew what these things mean to a child.
Let's get out of here.
Roger looks straight ahead as he drives. Julie leans closer to him.
Roger.
He looks down, but refuses to look at her. He stops the car in front of a bar.
What's the matter?
And gets out.
Take the car on home.
Roger.
I'm not coming home. I don't ever want to see anything or anyone that reminds me.
All right. Bye.
She drives off as Roger watches. Shoulders slumped, head down, he walks alone down the street.
Laugh at the rain together. Sang love's refrain.
In the apartment, Julie sets her suitcase down on the coffee table.
We'll always be together.
And goes over to change the record. And a faraway look comes into her eyes.
For you. Nature patterned you, and when she was done,
Applejack comes up the stairs.
You were all the sweet things rolled into.
Those fool songs kind of take you back, don't they?
Yes, they do take you back.
Decide which ones you're going to keep and which ones you're going to leave for him.
If I funny, Applejack. I can't seem to divide them. They belong to both of us. Guess I'll just leave them.
While I was listening downstairs there, I could remember just as clear the first time I ever saw you. Roger brought you into the bulletin. I was cussing and pounding that old machine. Gee, you didn't know we was all going to get to know each other so well then, did you?
Could you get the rest of the things out of the bedroom for me, please?
As Applejack goes for her things, Julie picks up her tickets from the mantel. Downstairs, Roger comes in the front door. Upstairs, Julie takes a book off a shelf and puts it in her suitcase. Roger comes in and sees the suitcase. Julie ignores him.
I don't blame you, Julie. I don't blame you at all. You should leave me. Why don't you say it, honey? It's all true. I haven't done any one of the big things I plan to do for you. But right where we started, I'm still struggling. I've let you down all around, honey. Well, all I needed to make it 100% was for you to leave me. And I can't think of a reason in the world for you not to. I'm licked, Julie.
You're not licked, Roger. It's just us. We're licked as far as our being together is concerned. When something really came along that hit us hard enough, we couldn't face it together.
She walks over to him and gently touches his arm.
I needed you an awful lot these last few days. But you've been miles away. I've been entirely alone. Right here in this room with you.
I know, dear.
Applejack comes out of the bedroom with Julie's belongings. Taking a suitcase from Julie, he starts to leave, but hesitates.
I wish I could do something to help you, too.
It just hasn't worked out.
Applejack leaves. Roger and Julie start to follow, then pause at the top of the stairs.
Oh, it did work out, Julie. Things were wonderful until this happened to us. I don't know. I just haven't been able to think straight the last few days. She was never sick before, and then all of a sudden it was all over. If there was only some way that people could know a few days ahead what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, the day before she was taken sick, she asked me for a quarter, and I wouldn't let her have it. And she asked me to take her to the movies, and I said, no, run along, I'm too busy.
I know. It was the same with me. I was trying on her angel costume, and she was so excited she couldn't stand still. I scolded her. I said, I'll never try another dress on you again. I never did.
Yeah? Oh.
He hands Julie the phone.
Hello. Miss Oliver?
At Miss Oliver's end.
It's a very strange thing, Mrs. Adams. But we have a little boy who is just 2 years old. Well, it's the oddest thing. He's the exact image of the youngster you asked for when you first wrote to me. You remember?
Julie holds the receiver so Roger can hear.
I have that old letter here in front of me now. Curly hair, blue eyes, dimple. And this is strictly off the record. For really, another couple has the right to see him first. But he's such a remarkable baby that I thought perhaps you and Mr. Adams might take a look.
Yes.
Oh, Miss Oliver, please don't let that other couple see him until we do, will you?
I won't, my dear. Goodbye.
Julie hangs up and sets her suitcase down. Fighting back tears, they look lovingly at each other. Roger walks over to the top of the stairs.
Well, he's only 2 years old. I better put up the kid again, hadn't I?
Yes.
I wouldn't want the little fellow falling down the stairs and breaking his arm.
Oh, I guess we'd better get out the crib.
They stand in the nursery doorway.
Then if he's 2 years old, he can sleep in this bed, Claudia.
Oh, sure, sure.
We won't have to put the chairs around.
Over in that corner, I could put a little electric train.
The End. This described version of Penny Serenade was created by Audiovision Canada. The narrative description was written by Nancy Gates, narrated by Elva Mae Hoover, woven into the soundtrack by Randy Giroux and Valerie Hawkschild, and produced by Marianne Cherick. For other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audiovision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. The players, Julie Gardner, Irene Dunn, Roger Adams, Cary Grant, Miss Oliver, Beulah Bondi, Applejack, Edgar Buchanan, Dottie, Anne Duran, Trina at the age of 6, Eva Lee Cooney.